Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by tonight. This week, we have spent a lot of time talking about mental illness. And as I listened to some of the shows, even though I heard a few things that would be of a positive nature, to give everybody some hope as to what to do, we didn't have a lot of that. We had a lot of problems without any solutions. And earlier on in the week, when I had done some research, I had found this organization, and it's called NAMI, N-A-M-I. And it's kind of an amazing organization, and it's dedicated itself to mental illness. It's the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and you can Google it, and it can help you find out if you're worried, if you're scared about yourself, about someone you love. You're wondering if something strange is going on. They have conversations about absolutely everything that you'd need to know, from the different types of mental illness, from the different kinds of help that you can get for mental illness. It's really quite good. And it gives you ideas on where you can go, what kind of help is done for things like this. Now, one of the other things that I never had realized when I started researching all of this is the fact that it is a myriad of disorders, and I mean so many that it's hard to name them all. So, you know, there's bipolar, there's schizophrenia, there's so many types of mental illness, and they all have different manifestations. If you are struggling, a lot of times in the very beginning, it starts with things like anxiety or mood swings, even things like eating disorders or controlling your impulses or addictions. There's so many different things that can lead to something that's much bigger than what it starts out to be. Now, the reason I wanted to bring this up is because I don't want everybody to think that there's no solutions. And we talked at length earlier this week about how horrible some of the mental institutions have been during the years. And I talked about it again last night. If you do, I have a fear that you're all going to get on the computer because you're a little bit worried about either yourself or someone you care about, and it's kind of overwhelming. So of all the things that I looked at, NAMI seemed to be the most organized, with the most information, and also solutions, places, names of places that you can email or you can call, you can get in touch with, so that you can get the kind of help that you're going to need. So I want you all to know that that is out there. I did put one of the NAMI sites on my Facebook page, on my I never know what you call those pages. So my main page, not where all the conversations are, but my main page. So you can find it on there. And I think maybe for some of you, there will be some benefit when you can find out some of that stuff. And I do think that if you research and have a look at all the different ideas that there are in regard to treatment. Everything isn't fixed with medication. Shelley and I have both talked at length about nutrition, what you're eating, what you're taking in. All those kind of things are important, as well as what's going on with you, heredity-wise, or if you've gotten to a certain point in your life where some of your bad choices have made you have some of these different kind of challenges in regard to mental illness. NAMI, don't forget the name of it. Check it out. You can find it, like I said, on my Facebook page, and see what you can. If you need the help, that will help you. You are also always welcome to call the show and let us know that you're looking for help, and we will look for you. We will see what we can find out for you. Now, I'm going to bring Shelley in because I also today or this evening would like to talk about this very out of control Zimmerman trial. Lots of news about it today. Are you there, Shelley? Hi.
Yes. Hi, hon. Yeah, I didn't lose you this time when I went through Atlantic Avenue. I kept waiting for the phone to hang up, and it didn't, so I'm very happy. That's interesting. Now watch.
Yeah.
In about 30 seconds, I'll lose the call. But
well, you know, that's... It's kind of played by ear here lately, so
Actually,
it's not just our phones. A lot of times, too, it has something to do with the radio station itself and their connections. So.
Right. But so what's the deal with the Zimmerman trial? I'm not up on that.
Well, it's really kind of crazy, all the things that are going on with him, and I'm trying to bring up the one. Newsreel that I got today that was really, really kind of crazy. One of the lawyers states right during the trial, "Oh my God! Just when I thought this case couldn't get any more bizarre, they're changing some of the charges, and they want a murder charge." And that's what he was charged with in the very beginning. But now they want to charge him with child abuse as well. And I'm like, huh? I mean, mind you, I don't know. And I'm not going to take a stand either way. I'm sad that a 17-year-old boy is gone. Because even if he was misbehaving right now, that doesn't mean that's who he was going to be when he was 25. And that's a shame. That's awful. That's heartbreaking. And,
well, I don't know what this story is about, though.
Oh, you don't know anything about the Zimmerman trial?
No, that's what I'm saying.
I thought you knew, at least I just thought you weren't up to date on it.
I don't watch the news. I get home so late. I don't read the papers and stuff, so I rely on your show for this kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, he's the neighborhood watchman here in Florida who was doing his rounds one evening in his neighborhood and saw a young man with a hoodie on. And I guess he followed him for a while. Now, I'm going to repeat what I've read. I don't know this for true. I want everybody to understand. If I had that inside information, I'd be a lot richer than I am. But what it is about is he comes up on him. His side of the story is there was an altercation because he was following him and asking the boy where he was going, and they fought with each other. And in the 911 tape, you hear somebody screaming. And, of course, his parents say it was him. And Zimmerman, who's an older guy, his dad says it's him. Zimmerman, when you get there, when the police arrive, Zimmerman has a bloody nose, and the back of his head is all, like, bloody and mashed because he said the kid slammed him into the sidewalk. And but Trayvon Martin is dead. So he was carrying a firearm, and that's not necessarily protocol for Community Watch. And apparently when he called and said, we have somebody out here that shouldn't be in the neighborhood and da-da-da, he was told, you don't need to follow him. You're not supposed to be following him. Just report it and leave him alone. He didn't.
Oh,
but
wow.
As the story has developed, you find out that there has been major problems in the neighborhood. He's worried about some of the older people and had even gone to some of the older people's homes and made sure they had good locks on their doors and was taking this particular job or this responsibility very seriously. So now, instead of just charging him with manslaughter, I think second-degree manslaughter, they are charging him with second-degree murder and then a manslaughter charge and the fact that he abused a child. Now, I don't. It seems redundant to me. I mean, if you, you know, some of these things. But of course, courts and everything, having already been through that with the grandson, it's kind of scary what can happen in there. I'll read a little bit in case there's.
Were there any witnesses at all?
No.
Oh,
but there were people that listened to the 911 calls. And there were people, you know, that were in touch with Zimmerman during all this happening. And
who initiated the 911 call?
He did, Zimmerman.
Huh. Oh, that's just bizarre. I don't understand where the child abuse is coming in. I don't understand where murder charges either. I mean, if you kill someone in the throes of an attack, I can almost see manslaughter, all right? You know, like involuntary manslaughter or something like that. But isn't murder deliberate? I mean, you know, a murder
mm-hmm.
charge, isn't that
mm-hmm.
when it, you know, first degree is when it's premeditated. But I don't
right.
think he was trying to kill the kid. He was either trying to defend himself or what do you call it? Detain him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But murder mm-hmm. is when you kill someone deliberately.
I don't think so. I think premeditated murder is when you kill somebody deliberately. Manslaughter and in the first degree and in the second degree, it all has to do with what weapon was used and how much. You know, how much altercation there was and all that kind of stuff. But the truth of the matter is there was nobody there but the boy and the man. So it's one person's word against the other. That's where everything
wow.
gets so scary because you have, and then, of course, when you hear somebody screaming and saying, somebody help me, it's really not... the right word. It's not real clear, and it's you know, even the parents couldn't tell for sure. So I think that at the end of the day,
I'm surprised. You know, with all the technology we have, they can't take a voice test and see if it's the guy. If it's not the guy, then it had to be the boy. I mean, we have the technology to figure out whose voice
yes.
it is.
Well, that's what I've wondered, and there's been no mention of that. So unless they've already done that, but it's too garbled or something, and they can't get it that way, that could be, but I don't know.
Wow. That's awful. So what's happening with the trial now?
Well, the prosecution has tried to paint Zimmerman, that's the man, as an angry wannabe cop who tracked Trayvon Martin. And that's why they can charge him with the manslaughter charges and base the murder on child abuse, from everything
wow.
I understand. So it is absolutely scary, and it is absolutely convoluted, you know, for sure. But in the meantime, they've spent a lot of time and energy. And for me, you know, when I read this today, I was like, I don't understand. So closing arguments underway in Zimmerman murder trial. The judge has ruled that jurors can consider a lesser charge of manslaughter for George Zimmerman, charged with second-degree murder. And first-degree murder, a prosecutor must show the defendant's specific intent to kill premeditated. If a person points a gun at another person and aims it at their heart, instead of just shooting quickly, they are in the premeditation zone. Now, there's something I didn't know. So premeditation can be a split second, evidently.
Wow.
And the penalty is punishable by death. If the court determines that the defendant shouldn't receive the death penalty, state law requires a sentence of life in prison. That's for first-degree murder.
Right.
And it, according to the lawyers that are against George Zimmerman, they say Trayvon Martin is dead because George Zimmerman tracked and then shot Trayvon instead of waiting for police to arrive. And that's true. But according to Zimmerman, the reason he shot is because Trayvon attacked him. The defense team scheduled to close Friday has maintained that Trayvon, 17, was the aggressor and that Zimmerman, 29, shot him in self-defense. Using a projector, Using a projector, one of the lawyers showed jurors a photo of Zimmerman taken at the police station the night of the shooting, alongside a close-up of Trayvon's dead body. The lawyer noted that Trayvon's hands had no blood on them, said his hoodie string may have been pulled down by Zimmerman in a struggle. His, the young man's, body speaks to you. It proves to you that this defendant is lying about what happened. So I guess he gets that from the way he was laying on the ground. I'm not sure how you would get that. But if somebody's got a gun, he's the equalizer. He asked the six women on the jury to give your God-given common sense and find the former neighborhood watch volunteer guilty of second-degree murder. But apparently, you know, they're just going to keep fighting it. So now down here it says the third-degree murder charge requests a Drew. Wait a minute. The third-degree murder charge request drew a heated argument. I see. Third-degree murder can involve death that results from committing a felony, even if the accused did not mean to kill the victim. So that means he pulled his gun and was threatening but really didn't mean to fire it, or maybe meant to fire it to stop him or something like that. Assistant state attorney arguing for the count said Zimmerman committed child abuse, a felony on Trayvon. So that's how they're including the child abuse. So it's, you know.
It's like the way I look at these neighborhood watch, and I'm not, this isn't a commentary necessarily on Zimmerman, it's on any neighborhood watch. First of all, you have to be very careful that you don't have neighborhood watch people who have a vigilante mentality, because it can be carried away. And if, in fact, this kid did not attack him the way he says, okay, then this is even more of a tragedy, okay? But what can happen is, I was always under the understanding that these neighborhood watch people were supposed to go out in pairs. That kind of seems like a good thing to me. Number one, they can protect each other if something does happen. You've got a witness there. And generally, people aren't going to attack, you know, multiple people, they'll flee or something like that. But for him to walk up on, if for him to get close enough to this kid for the kid to attack him, according to what he says, I kind of agree with the police. You can't do that because he's not a police officer. He doesn't know how to restrain somebody in a safe manner. And with regard to gun safety, because I recently went through gun training and to get a carry license,
And if the other person does not have a gun, you're not supposed to approach them. You're not. It's not like the Wild Wild West. If you have a gun and the person that you're trying to check out doesn't have a gun, you're not supposed to pull your gun. Now, if somebody bigger than you attacks you and you shoot in self-defense, that's one thing. But then that becomes hard to prove anyway if they don't have a weapon. The fact that you chose to bring yours out, because you always have the option of leaving a scene unless somebody gets in your car. Now, that's a different story. You can pull your gun and say, get out of my car. You're protecting your living space if somebody comes in your house or something. But if you're out on the street and somebody approaches you and they're not armed and you feel menaced by them, cross the street, turn around, walk away, call 911 while you have your phone out, you know. So that's where there seems to be a gray area here. It doesn't appear to me that he tried to get away from this kid, but that he tried to confront him. And that's a big no-no, especially with the fact that he was armed. He should never have approached him. He should have waited for the police to get there.
Well, I feel the same way in regard to that, and I do feel that, like many, many times when we read about or know about a situation like this with two people and that have different
lost you.
Yeah. It sounded like you were having a gunfight at OK Corral there for a minute.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know,
the
boy, it sounds like he might have been a little intimidated. He could have even been scared. And he could have been walking away as fast as he could. And Zimmerman could have been overzealous, like the way they're painting him. On the same token, for days prior to this, maybe it's one of those situations like in many neighborhoods, enough is enough. And you've got somebody, you feel like you have the upper hand, and you feel like you're the one that's in charge because you do know you have a gun. You do know that you are the one, in your mind, you are the one that's right. And see, that's what makes it scary. That's, you know, I read an interesting article the other day about lie detector tests. One of the reasons that they are so difficult to use is because if somebody believes they're telling the truth, they can beat it.
That's right.
Because the truth is the truth to them. Now, whether or not that's really, really the truth from another point of view, even an innocent bystander, not the other person on the other side of the altercation, but say somebody else is watching it and they say, no, that's not what happened at all. But if the person taking the lie detector test truly believes he did what he should have done, did what he could have done, and saved his life and maybe a couple others, then he's going to pass the lie detector test. And I suspect, I've watched this from the beginning, and this man is not... there's nothing about him that looks like he doesn't understand the gravity of what took place. There's nothing about him that looks like he doesn't get that, you know, he maybe wishes now that he'd been a little less overzealous, perhaps. But he
right.
does not. The look of a
well,
man
let,
who's ashamed of himself.
Let me ask you a question. See, has there been any update with regard to the young, what was the young man's name?
Any update for what?
What was the young man's name?
Trayvon.
Okay, Trayvon. Has there been any update on to his history? Was he ever in trouble with the law? Was he a problem? Was it possible that he was out there for no good? Did they ever comment on this kid?
Yes, yes. And some of it is normal, and some of it is that he's a wise ass. I mean, I saw some pictures yesterday of him giving people the finger and smoking a pot pipe. I don't know whether they were real or not. Don't care. Like I said in the beginning, he may have been, you know, on the wrong path. He very well could have been. But so are a million other teenagers. And if he wasn't aggressive, you know, that's what makes this so sad. One person is scared and has been given a job to do and thinks they're protecting a whole bunch of the older people that live in the neighborhood. And he does something like this because he truly believes he should have. The young man that night had just bought Skittles and a soda or something at the store and was on his way home, supposedly. And I don't think he was to no good that night. It doesn't appear as though he was. But again, you know, it's a sad thing. It's a sad story.
It's a very sad story.
Really,
when
I really think we're talking about something that happened, like we've talked about on the show before, when things get carried away and there's nobody around to put the brakes on, the car spirals out of control. And I think that's what happened this night. And I have seen, like you just said, I have seen reports that he wasn't the goody-two-shoes that they tried to paint him as in the beginning. But that doesn't mean he deserved to be shot either. I mean, let's face it. But
I mean, I know guys, because you said, what was he, 17?
Yes.
Okay. Because I know some 17-year-olds that if they get stopped by somebody, they're pretty freaking arrogant because they think that an adult is, you know, like encroaching on their rights, you know, that they have a right to walk the street or they have a right to be here. And they actually get, like, you know, fairly high and mighty if somebody says, well, what are you doing here? You know, it's none of your so-and-so business or something. You know, and they get pretty nasty. And it's only because it's 17 years old, you know, you think you know everything, and it's like, leave me alone, man, and that type of thing. And it's just disrespectful, but, you know, if the other guy overreacted to it, you know, like said, what are you doing here, and he flipped him off or something, said, none of your damn business, yeah, it's like, I'm just wondering, was there any more of the story for Zimmerman as to why he felt it was necessary to draw his gun on this kid? What did they look like as far as, was the kid as big as Zimmerman, or was, you know, or what was the size difference between the two people?
Not much difference in height, but I would say in volume, Zimmerman is kind of, I'm not going to say chubby, but he's, I guess he is chubby. He's kind of like, I can't think of anybody that I could tell you. He's not fat, but he's, you know, he's like a thick man. I think he might be maybe a little Spanish and maybe even Jewish heritage, kind of a mixture. I don't know for sure. But
so
he probably
like it's not like this kid like was much, much bigger than him.
No, that's for sure. The
I'm
kid
just trying
was.
To figure out why he thought it was necessary to bring his gun out. That's such a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I think he thought that he caught somebody. Just, you know, the hoodie, and the sneakiness, and the being 11:30 or whatever it was at night, and all the, you know, the circumstances. And the fact that they were having trouble in the neighborhood, that's why they came up with the neighborhood watch and everything. It just snowballed into something that could have very easily been, you know, been fixed without a death.
Right.
But there's also, like what you just said, there's a lot to be said for the fact that if young people think that it is cool or appropriate or they're right to act like, you know, James Dean wannabes or, you know, these little tough guys that don't have to do anything that they don't want to do because they're just who they are. you know, both sides of this issue took everything too far. If this man was walking in a neighborhood that he didn't live in at after 11 o'clock at night, and has his hoodie pulled up over his head so nobody can see his face, it shouldn't surprise him that people will wonder what he's up to, number one. And maybe that's what he wants them to think. Not because he's going to do something, but just because he wants them to be a little bit intimidated by him and a little bit scared by him. Not something you should be shot for, by the way, but still, I can see that kind of mindset with a 17-year-old. And then you have the other guy who thinks he's taken a job and takes it very seriously and thinks he's protecting everybody. Now, from what I understand, when the confrontation finally happened, Trayvon attacked Zimmerman. And one story I heard was that Trayvon was on top of Zimmerman and smacking his head into the sidewalk and punching him in the face. That's why the back of his head was all bloody and under his nose was all bloody. However, according to the lawyers during the case, there was no blood on his hands. So, but I'm going to tell you something. I've seen... People get punched.
I mean, how do you punch someone? Or if you take somebody and you're smacking their head on the ground, your knuckles are going to get scuffed. You can't grab their head on the front. You have to grab their head from the side. And if you're pounding them, the front of your fingers is going to get something on them, or even the guy's blood on it. You know, if you're doing that. I don't understand how this kid had nothing on his hands. It doesn't seem plausible.
Right. Well, that's a big part of the case.
Wow. And that's the kind of major. I mean, how is Zimmerman explaining that? Is he just sticking to his story, or does he have an explanation for how his hands didn't get injured?
No, he has not. I just read something a few minutes ago, and then that whole story kind of disappeared, and now I can't find it again. I read it, well, not a few minutes ago, about 5:30 I found it. And he said they said during it that he spoke again, but I can't find that anywhere where he actually spoke.
Wow.
Let me see if it says anything right here. I found another one. No. So really, he's not said anything. But I think that's what's going to play into this a lot. The only thing that I mean, the whole case has been, kind of convoluted. And I think that they're claiming that Zimmerman profiled him because of the hoodie and all this kind of stuff, and he probably did.
Right.
Trayvon tried to maintain being, a big shot and cool, and probably, even though he knew there was a gun, didn't think this kind of, you'll have to look at a picture of Zimmerman so you can see what I'm talking about. There's nothing about him that's intimidating at all. Nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
I mean, he could be the bus driver. Every regular looking guy, clean cut and everything, but they're saying that the deliberations with the jury are supposed to start tomorrow. And now they've added, he called the attempt to add the third-degree murder charge a trick by the state. But I'll tell you something. After being in court with Mikey, we've talked about this on the show, too.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a cleanup of our laws and take some of the old precedents that were put in place because of old cases and things like that really shouldn't pertain to anything that we have now or do now. We're a different country.
That's right.
We're a different people. But the big thing is you have a teenager that's no longer alive. His parents, I'm sure, are totally devastated, and the people that loved him, and something will have to be done. He said, I found some more that Benjamin, a teenager is dead. He's dead not just because the man made those assumptions, but because he acted on those assumptions. And unfortunately, because his assumptions were wrong, Trayvon Benjamin Martin no longer walks on this earth. And
wow.
He said that Zimmerman wanted to be a police officer, and that's why he followed Martin through his neighborhood, even though the teen wasn't doing anything wrong. He assumed Trayvon Martin was a criminal, and that is why we are here. Zimmerman showed ill will and hatred when he whispered profanities to a police dispatcher over his cell phone while following Martin. He urged jurors, the lawyer, urged jurors to hold Zimmerman accountable for his actions. In order to get a second-degree conviction, prosecutors must show Zimmerman showed ill will, hatred, or spite. The law doesn't allow people to take the law into their own hands, too, you know.
Right. What did they ever print what he actually said on his cell phone? What were the profanities that he was, I mean, what was he saying about this kid?
I didn't hear any of those. I heard about them, but I've never seen them in writing and never seen them on any of the things that I've looked at since it's been in the thick of the trial.
Well,
but,
if it's something that's displayed for the jurors, that's absolutely going to impact the their ruling. Because if he, before there was actually a confrontation, if Zimmerman was already saying things that were, you know, judgmental or something before he even approached the kid, that's not going to make him look good or look rational. Because it was almost like he had a preconceived notion of what he was walking up on, and you can't do that with people. You can't judge a book by its cover. You know, you have to approach everybody with respect and, like, you know, innocent until proven guilty, and say, hey, man, you know, what are you doing out this late? But if he approached this kid in an antagonistic way or like he was doing something wrong, it might have started this whole downward cycle that ended up where it did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with that. The I think, like I said, though, I think if you sit and mull over everything, though, and of course, because I always try to look at both sides of an issue, I can understand how it got where it got, because I have a pretty good understanding of how people think when they're doing something. But he, you know, he did overreact. But again, but the old saying, two wrongs don't make a right. Yes, this young man is gone. And yes, he could have, by the time, if he was, you know, giving his mom and dad a little run for their money right now, then, you know, join the crowd. But if, you know, he may have turned another corner and cleaned up his act, and, you know, he could have been the next president of the United States. Who knows?
That's right.
And Zimmerman as well. Here's a man who thinks he's doing something good. Did he let it go to his head? Yes. Is that the first time that's ever happened? Hell no. And it just got out of control. And, you know, we've talked about this on the show a lot of times, too. Fear does crazy things to people. Crazy, crazy things. When we talk about mental illness and things like that, and we give credence to people who are legitimately challenged with their mental health, they do things like this. But the truth of the matter is, we all do. If we get frightened or scared or think we are under some kind of threat, we get goofy, shall we? Just do. That's what, you know, I wouldn't
have a gun.
I can very well,
yeah.
But I wouldn't gun.
Yeah, well, that's why I was talking about in the beginning. I said when you have, that's why I was surprised that this guy was going out alone, especially because of the fact that when you feel fear, a lot of times you make bad choices. Okay,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people do some pretty silly things when they're afraid, you know. And then once everything is over with, they're like, oh wow, you know. And then they realize what they were really dealing with, you know. But you know, these neighborhood watch groups are so important. These people should be commended because it is brave what they do. It's about time, you know, people take their communities back and things like that. So I applaud people that get involved that way. I think they're wonderful that they would have that kind of, compassion for their community to make sure that people are okay. But the flip side of that is someone like, and I'm kind of leaning towards Zimmerman being in this light, okay, people that end up becoming too empowered by it and almost get a vigilante attitude where all of a sudden now they don't wait for the judgment, they don't wait to see how something turns out, they're making like a knee-jerk reaction, and you cannot get involved in Neighborhood Watch and have that mentality because that's when tragedies like this happen. They don't think something through. They're, you know, they it's like this instant judgment on somebody. And then they use unreasonable force in a situation where it's not called for. So it is a tragedy that this happened at all. But but I just want to, you know, I don't want people to get discouraged from getting involved in these neighborhood watch groups. But it's really important to go out in pairs. Number one, it kind of takes the fear off the plate. You've got somebody there as a witness, and generally people are not going to mess with two people where they might try to mess with one and get away, you know. But if they've got another person there who's going to be on a cell phone while they're attacking the first person, they don't bother, you know. You're going to have a more controlled situation whenever you're in pairs. So it's a shame that he didn't realize that.
Well, and that's, you know, that really is the truth. It's kind of like a catch-22 in both scenarios. It's just like a 17-year-old kid. I mean, if I said to you, I have yelled at my own children, my grandchildren, other people's children, for as long as I can remember, about walking around late at night. I mean, 11:30, that's late at night. That's not, I mean, even 9 o'clock, if you're out here in the acreage, it's dark as hell. And you shouldn't be by yourself. You, not just because you're afraid of somebody attacking you or anything like that. What if you just fell? What if you just, what if you were walking on a dirt road that late at night and fell into a pothole or something and broke your leg?
Right.
Yes, this is the world of cell phones. So things have changed a bit, but it still seems poor judgment to do some things that are like saying, here I am, come and get me, or, I'm not afraid of anything, I'll be a fool until the day something gets me. So you know,
right.
Some things are not smart, and what you said about having somebody with you, I agree, Shelley. I hadn't thought about it until you said it, but I am almost positive any time I have ever talked about neighborhood watches and things like that, even in my days, spring break, on the beach, Fort Lauderdale, crazy kids everywhere, and I made my guys, we stayed up 1 year. It was really crazy. I mean, a lot of kids don't go to Fort Lauderdale Beach anymore, but this 1 year, I can't remember what was going on. Something was going on, so they couldn't get into Mexico or something. So we had a bunch of kids. And
oh, wow.
We Friday night and Saturday night, all night long, and I had buddies for everybody, and we all had walkie-talkies. And there was never a dull moment after 11:30 at night. Never a dull moment. Fights,
wow.
people falling down the stairs, somebody almost drowned, and somebody jumping off the second floor into the pool. You name
it. Oh, my God.
They do it. And even those people who were, you know, some of the guys that I had working for me worked as security guards places. They would make themselves available during spring break. They didn't work for me full time. But it was, everybody had somebody close to them, and we weren't talking about a giant neighborhood. We were talking about a hotel property.
Wow.
Right. You should always think about safety first. And it appeared to me that neither person this night thought about any of those kind of things. It is a shame.
Right. The kid shouldn't have been alone and the guy shouldn't have been alone.
Oh, exactly. They both should have had somebody with them. And I guess Zimmerman's, I just read here that the jury has listened, excuse me, many times to Zimmerman's side of the story, but they did it on a video so that they could see it. And they won't let Zimmerman talk, which, of course, seems to be protocol in most of these kind of cases anyway. Very rarely do they have the person that's accused of anything. I think because you can ask questions, and because when you're on the stand, you end up having to take the fifth, and then everybody makes assumptions. So you can't say, if you're not on the stand, then you can't say anything that's going to hurt your case. And of course, if it hurt your case, it would be you. The young man that we went to trial with, the other boys all spoke. The two boys that accepted the sentence, they spoke. And but the other boy never spoke at all, not once during any of the trial. So I think that in a lot of cases, that's for safety's sake. You can't, from what I understand, the other side can't call him on the floor. You know, like a lot of times you can say, I want somebody to be, we want to question this person, and we can call him in. The other side can do that. You can't do that with the accused.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, you know, it's a sad thing. I think it's really awful that now this man may spend the rest of his life in prison, and a 17-year-old boy is dead, and none of it had to happen. None of it was necessary. So a lot of controversy today as well with the other young man that had something to do with the bombs in Chicago. That is going to be a horrible thing as well. He goes on trial this week, I think, this week coming. And now he's the only one that's left to answer for anything because the brother is dead. So that's going to be a horrible trial as well. I don't know. It's a shame where we've gotten to. But right now on this video that I have on, they're showing with a dummy how Trayvon could have held your question that you said earlier. He's got a hold of his shoulders, Shelley. And, oh, I've lost her. Here she is. Did you hear what I just said, or were you gone?
No, I couldn't get an antenna to call back in until it's just like 30 seconds ago.
Okay, so they're showing a video on that site with a dummy, and the lawyer is straddling him and has him by his shoulders and is just pushing him, you know, like shaking him into the sidewalk, which is the reason that they say there's no blood on his hands.
Well, that's certainly possible. I mean, I'm glad that they're showing an alternative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
So, and I also want to mention tonight, I don't know if they ever listen to our show, but, and I don't know if Shelley knows this yet, this may be the first time she's hearing this, but very dear friends of ours who own the company called Got Sprouts, Jody and Sean, we've known them for quite a long time, very, very, very special people. Jody's mom has been ill for quite some time, and she passed this week.
Oh, okay. You know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I have tried on a couple different occasions to speak. I ended up leaving a message with somebody at the house, and condolences from all of us, and said, you know, if there was anything needed from any of us, and we would like to know when the services are. So we'd like to send our love and condolences out to Jody and Sean. This was a very, very lady, very special lady, fun, full of life and energy, beautiful. She'll really be missed by her family, that's for sure. So I didn't want to forget to mention that tonight.
All right.
So
very
tomorrow
well.
Night, taking the night off, Shell, because we've been asked to come to a celebration tomorrow night, and 8 o'clock is too late. It's going to start at like 5. So
okay.
Nights are often a slow listener night because so many people have plans. So I want to apologize, though, because I really try not to take off nights. But I also want to remind everybody that the end of this month, my son Michael, who in October will be 44, is having major surgery on his trachea from an injury that he received when he was 13 years old when he was hit by a car. And he was intubated for so long that it scarred his trachea, and when he woke up from the coma, he couldn't breathe. He ended up having surgeries for 2 years, and each surgery he would wear a special Montgomery T-tube in his throat in the hopes that the trachea would heal open. And it didn't until the fourth surgery, and a very special doctor at Jackson Memorial lasered Michael's vocal cords. And that's where the granulation kept building up and would fill up his windpipe so that he couldn't breathe. Well, it's been 30 years, and we have learned very recently that often brain trauma or any kind of body trauma can reoccur after 30 years. And they're doing all kinds of, trying to figure out why. That's true. Michael, because he was in a coma for so long, he also is having a great deal of trouble with his motor skills. And they're telling us that this is like a 30-year repercussion of the brain trauma that he experienced as a 13-year-old boy. So he is having that done on the 31st of July. He will be in the hospital for a week to 10 days. In Miami at Sylvester Clinic, which is affiliated with the Jackson Memorial compound. And a very special doctor that actually took care of him when he was a little boy helped me find the doctor that is going to do this this very special surgery.
Wow.
So then on the 5th of August, which is only 5 days later, Big Spike, my husband, has his surgery. He has an aortic aneurysm, and he has to have a very special, because he's such a special guy, he can't take a run-of-the-mill stent, so they had to customize one for him. I think they're going to tattoo Spike on the side of it and insert it in his aorta to block off the very grapefruit aneurysm. And it has to be customized because the aneurysm is very close to the ventricles that go into his kidneys. So they'll make it so that there's holes there for the blood to flow into the kidneys. Been done before, but still, you know, scary. He is almost 70, but strong as a bull moose and is doing very well. So that week from the, probably from the 31st until the 7th or 8th, unless this really goes without any hitches and we're done when they say we're going to be done and everything is cool, I will probably take a mini vacation from the show. Because even though it's only an hour at night, there's a lot of preparation and I have to be here at a specific time and everything. So I want everybody to be aware that I'm doing that, and thank you in advance for understanding why. And that means Shell gets a couple nights off, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good to have time to do some other things, but, you know, but I love the show. I love what the show is all about and the types of topics that, that you know, that we talk about. And it's, I mean, I just think you're doing an amazing thing here. So, you know, I've been honored since the beginning to participate in this with you.
Well, I really appreciate it as well. And if all of you haven't guessed, I know we've mentioned it before, but Shelley and I have been friends for a very long time, and we've gone through, as friends do, we've gone through some things together, and some in Shelley's life, some in mine, some in both of ours at the same time.
Right.
And it's just given us an incredibly strong friendship. And it's funny because a lot of times when you get to be older, you don't make a lot of friends anymore. Usually, if you're lucky enough to have childhood friends or friends that you made in the prime of your career at your workplace and stuff like that, are usually the ones you stay close with. And we have them as well, but we're very blessed, aren't we, Shelley? We have quite a clique of friends that we love a lot, and a few guys that join us every now and then when they feel like being henpecked. And
true.
And, yep, spend time with us. And since we started the radio show, we've made some awesome friends as well. And it's funny how, without ever laying eyes on a lot of these people, except for their pictures on Facebook and stuff, you feel connected to them just because we are all so like-minded. And I believe at the end of the day, there's millions of people out there that want a kinder world and a nicer place to home. And that's really what this is all about. And I'm finding it so of even very young people. So I think there's a lot of hope for us, but I think it's imperative that we discuss things, mull them over, and come up with some personal solutions that we can all put into action on our own, in our own spaces, and make a difference. And I want to thank everybody again for, we have a lot of people that listen to the show now. We've built up quite a group of people, and that's awesome. And you're all welcome to call in. You're all welcome to friend me on Facebook if you do Facebook. I promise I'm going to learn how to Twitter or tweet or whatever it is you do there. And
yeah, I got to learn that too.
And I have started a blog, and but I don't really know how you advertise your blog, so I'm a little stuck there. But I have started a blog. I have a blog page. It's called Renee's Heart to Heart. And you're welcome to look that up. It's a little bit about what's going on in here and what made me decide that this was something that I wanted to do. So, anything else tonight, Shel?
No, I thought it was a great conversation, you know, but I like all the topics you select, so it was good.
Well, I think this is a sad thing, and I think it kind of shows us what not thinking about what we're doing before we do it is an important thing and something everybody needs to remember to do.
Exactly.
So from my heart to yours, everybody, I want to say good night and God bless and talk to you Monday night. Okay, Shell. Thanks, baby.
All right, hon. You have a good night, too. Good night, everyone.
Good night.